Fast forward about a year, we were doing very well. Revenue was 6 to 8 times year over year. We were really close to break even on net income. The market was really owned by two primary competitors, and they were noticing, and others started noticing.
Hello and welcome to the Gross Profit Podcast. My name is James Kennedy. I'm the CEO and co-founder at ProcurementExpress.com. We take the hassle out of managing your SMB spend without buying an ERP, but we're not here to talk about that today. Instead, I've got Scott Keller, CEO of PathPredict LLC. PathPredict is a fractional CFO business founded in 2020. And I've invited Scott along today because we're going to dive into the world of staffing businesses in particular. Staffing is its own animal. It's not straightforward. It has particular challenges that other businesses don't have. And asking for a friend, my wife runs a business which staffs a lot of people. I'm interested to get some tips here today. So Scott, maybe you can launch us by telling us something about you that not many people know.
Sure. Thanks, James. Appreciate you having me on today and excited to talk. Typically, CFOs are considered the boring folks that their noses are in spreadsheets and it's all numbers all the time.
Only those who don't know. That's it.
Exactly. And some of us have a little bit of a life outside of that. And one of the things I enjoy doing is crawfish boils. So this is a practice, a party that's been based out of Louisiana for a long time. A friend of mine that I grew up with, his dad was from Louisiana. So he had a small one when I was younger and I was like, oh, this is really good. And move forward a couple of years and worked with a guy that was born and grew up in Louisiana. And I said, hey, would you help me host a crawfish boil? So he came over, he helped me for a year or two, learned the ropes from him. He ended up moving. So I continued hosting this crawfish boil, inviting friends, family, neighbors. Yeah. So it's been 11 or 12 different years that I've hosted a crawfish boil at my house. And yeah, so boiling about 40 to 50 pounds of crawfish for a bunch of people.
It just blew my mind. I was like, what is he talking about? I'd never even heard of this. So it's like a barbecue, but with boiling instead of crawfish. Is that it? And is it like a thing you do for, do you charge people or is it like a social thing? Do people, are you the crawfish guy now in town?
For me, I mean, you could, I guess, charge people. And I know some do, but no, for me, it was just an annual event that just have friends over and yeah, throw a bunch of crawfish in a pot with some sausage, onions, corn, boil it up with some seasoning and dump it on a table and you dig in.
Very good. And is it foolproof or is there, because it's saying, tell me where I'm wrong here, but when I get people around to my barbecue, I get uptight because I've got a bunch of South Africans in my family. So they're very uptight about how the barbecue is done and like how good it is. I'm sure it's the same in the South there. So is it easier or harder than a regular way to entertain people?
It's easier. It really is. It's hard to really mess it up. And you kind of learn some of the ins and outs of making sure things are cooked in the right order and the right timing. And then the people that show up for a year, they learn that the later batches are a little spicier because it sits in the same water. And yeah, it's not too bad. You sit around and have a drink and chat while the thing's boiling. And then you start over.
I love it. Okay. It alliterates as well. The crawfish CFO. I don't know if you want that to stick or not, but in my mind, that's where we're going with. All right. So that's the fun part. So now let me grill you to make sure that you are qualified to go around calling yourself the CFO, right? I want you to do that by giving me your biggest brag. What's your biggest professional brag to demonstrate what you've done in your business so far?
Yeah, sure. Happy to. So going back a few years during COVID, I came on board with a startup company, and they were in the high school sporting space. And this is during COVID, which actually it helped fuel their business a little bit. They were signing up contracts. It's a very usage-based revenue model. So they were bringing in some new revenue, but not a ton. And they really wanted to take advantage of the momentum that they built up. So we decided, and they can use it some money, right? Startups, they always need money. So we decided to go down the venture capital route. Did the whole roadshow COVID style, which means you do everything through the computer. But went down that path, had an offer from some venture capitalists, but the valuation just wasn't really there. Understandably, from my point of view, if I was on the other side of the table, there's still a lot of unknowns, right? This was COVID. Are people going to come back to sporting events? Are they not? But the founders just didn't feel comfortable and were really frustrated with the valuations they were getting.
So let me jump in there, because valuation is an interesting topic, right? So they had revenue, which is kryptonite for big valuations for a start, right? As soon as you have revenue, then suddenly the game's up. If you don't have any revenue, God, the sky's the limit. So how do you go about valuing your business like that? Is it EBITDA? Is it revenue? Sounds kind of seasonal. So how do you account for that?
Yeah, there was a lot of variables that went into that one, James. You had a lot of seasonality, very seasonal business. They had some revenue. We're still losing money. So okay. Definitely wasn't based off of that. So it was really a multiple off of the revenue number.
Okay, well, that's pretty good. And so obviously that number wasn't high enough for the founders, what they were offering, getting one or two, something like that.
Correct. Exactly. Yeah. So they really weren't, and what they were going to have to give up for the amount of investment, they weren't really happy with it. So we paused. We went through a deep dive financial forecasting, different revenue scenarios. We still need to put money in the business and build out some of the technology. What are the different priorities that we would have to invest in? You're always trying to hire salespeople to increase, right? So we went through revenue scenarios, looking at the cash runway, looking at different capabilities that we could or may not be able to put into the product. And got to the point where we moved from that frustration to almost relieved in that it was going to be tough, but we could make it work without the investment in the business. And the team decided we're going to move forward without it. It was very tollgate driven decisions, right? If we get to this point in revenue, we can hire that salesperson or we can bring on the extra IT build. But they were optimistic, right? We had a path to move forward. Fast forward about a year and we were doing very well. Revenue was six to eight times year over year. There we were really close to break even on net income. And we quickly became a very significant number three in the market. So the market was really owned by two primary competitors. We really became a significant number three and they were noticing and others were starting noticing. So we started having some of those other conversations around strategic partners, other investors, as well as some potential acquirers. Long story short, they ended up selling to one of their competitors, and the multiple that they end up getting on the revenue was above what the VCs were offering. And as well as they didn't have any of the dilution that the VCs would have brought. It was, to me, it was I consider it a fantastic success in that I was able to help them understand where they could get out of the business, like how far they could go to get to where they wanted to be with the business. And financial planning, cash management, faith in themselves, and they were able to really benefit from the path that we chose. And at the end of the day, that's really my goal is, as a fractional CFO, is to help these companies make financially educated decisions rather than having to go by gut and say, you know what, we think we can maybe make it through the next 12 months. So providing them that support so they can make a decision based off of data and analysis.
Yeah, listen, that resonates with me, that advice. Like, we raised a bit of money in 2016, which from angel investors who I love and have been fantastic. In other words, I've never heard from them again, which is great. I'd send them a check every now and again. And that's about all I have to do. That's a perfect investor. What I learned from that is we raised that money. It wasn't a lot. We never touched it. Like, we never, I don't think we ever went below. Like, you think it's just somehow there's a lot of pageantry in business. Mm-hmm. Oh, this is the thing you should do and we should raise money and blah, 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 blah. But at the same time, why do I post-rationalize it? I'm like, it gave me a bit more confidence to do things, like a bit more, maybe I wouldn't have done things that I had the way I had and so on. So even if we didn't touch the money, it was like the psychological value. This wasn't like the last, whatever, 10 grand we had. It was like whatever it was, I don't know, we had a 200 grand under that. So it was fine. I was fine with, it's very different, the last 10 grand versus 10 grand on top of an under 200 grand. But I'm glad you were able to walk them through it, because investing is tricky. Now, I wanted to ask something specific around there. which is, did these founders straight up say, listen, we want to sell this thing? Or were they, no, we want to operate it, we want to grow, we want to hold it. Like, what, did you know that was their objective, like to get acquired? Or was that just sort of happenstance?
It was the ultimate objective. The objective was, let's build this to the point where there's something to sell.
Right.
And either sell it within or, you know, there's a lot of strategic partnerships that could have happened as well. But yeah, it was definitely at least to take some chips off the table to a full sell.
Yeah. Okay. Because it's a touchy topic, really, especially when you have a team, you have a thing, like people don't like to say, hey, my aim is just to straight up sell this thing. People say this, but it's a touchy topic and you have to be honest with your CFO, but like your priest and your CFO, I guess. If you don't tell them exactly what's going to happen, then he can't help you. I think this is a big flaw, is that people think their CFO is going to be like a pricier accountant, and they don't see them as someone who can actually create a new future if you give them the right tasking, right? If you're honest with them and say, this is really what I'm looking for, then that CFO will be able to help build that future for you.
Yeah, okay, I agree.
I'll get off my soapbox on that one. All right, so you have to. So you've clearly got some chops here. You've helped these guys, and you're based out in Virginia, right? So are your clients? Is a geographical lock on mostly who you deal with, or you work with people all over the place these days?
I primarily work with people. I mean, it's a little heavier on the East Coast, but not necessarily. So I mean, it's nationwide. Typically in the U.S., there's no desire not to work outside of the U.S. At the same time, I think there's enough business in the U.S. to keep me busy.
Yes, there definitely is. In fact, we're all outside trying to get in. I'm over here in Dublin trying to get some of that business as well. So there's loads. All right, let's talk a little bit about staffing then. Staffing businesses, let's do the basics, asking for a friend. What is a staffing business?
Sure. So essentially, I look at a staffing business as a sales pipeline.
Okay.
And really a combination of two sales pipelines. You have a provider or the pipeline for individuals, right? You're finding people. And then you have another sales pipeline for clients. So you got your number one, your the people you're finding, the individuals you're finding, and then the places you're going to place them. And you've got to find the right mix or the right match, rather, for both of those. So you got to understand your pipeline for jobs that are out there, and then your pipeline for individuals that you're going to try to put in these jobs. And for staffing, it's a little bit interesting, at least for me. I think it's an interesting industry where you could have a relatively small number of full-time employees, like operational employees, if you will, but have a pretty large revenue-based revenue for the business, because you're placing, you could be have 10 people as internal employees, but be placing like 150, 200 people. So you're generating like a $15, $20 million business. And then on this flip side is, if you count all of those, you have got a lot of bodies or heads that you're responsible for, because you're paying payroll to all these people. You might be providing benefits to all these people. You're helping all these people find a job. And to me, that's the other side of, you know, you are truly helping somebody else, because you're helping them find that next job and that next place where they're going to earn a living.
Okay. So in Europe, I think we call this a recruitment business, right? So this is people who help you. I send my CV into them, and then they're going to go and hunt around and find job opportunities for me. And their revenue, the way it works here, maybe you can tell me if it's different over there, is you typically pay the staffing company, or the employer does, like roughly 1/12th or 10% of the salary for the employee, if it's an annual salary or whatever. And these guys are, let's face it, not popular amongst employers, right? If I had a dollar for every business owner or friend who complains about recruitment fees or staffing fees, I'd have a lot of money. So is it like, I can see, and I've been on both sides of that. I guess I used to have a recruiter, what we call a recruiter, when I was a jobbing programmer for contract work. And is there a difference between one that like does like full-time placement versus recruitment work, like contract work, 12 or 18 month work?
Yeah, so there's definitely a distinction between what kind of consider recruiting and permanent or contingent staffing, where recruiter is, James, I'm going to find you a job with, I'm just going to say, Path Predict, and I'm going to take a little cut of the annual salary, because I'm just going to connect you to that, to Path Predict, and you're going to get hired there.
Yeah.
The other side of it, the staffing or contingent, is All right, James, I'm going to put you at Path Predict for 6 months. And I'm going to pay you your salary. And then I'm going to go to Path Predict and invoice them. And then they're going to reimburse me plus a margin.
Right. Yeah.
And that's the side where it can be really tough to grow that type of business, because you're paying a lot of times a weekly payroll to the individuals you place, but then you're not getting paid back. You're not being reimbursed for 30, 45, you know, some of these VMS who's like that middleman, sometimes they're not paying you back for like 90 days. And that's a really tough cash calculation to figure out and to grow.
Got it. So fast growth is actually a problem, because you can't keep up with the payments. So is that a problem, a hard problem? Can't you just go to the bank and say, hey, you've seen other staffing companies, you can see we're growing. Is it easy to get debt, tell me about it?
It can be. There's banks, you can, you know, line of credit, you can also do factoring. Right. So you can go to a factoring company that says, look, I'm gonna take my 5% cut out of the invoices, I'm gonna collect it for you, give you the net. At the same time, that can be expensive. And that margin that you thought looked pretty good, pretty solid of, let's say 20%, 15%, 20% margin that you're making, all of a sudden gets cut by a third or half. And it's a lot harder to run that business that way. So it's also understanding, when do you need the line of credit? When do you need factoring? And when do you not need it? Like, when can you get off that gateway drug and bring that back in-house? And then there are different levels that you can hit where, okay, let's try to build up our own line of credit so we can fund ourselves, fund our own business with it.
Okay. So this is literally keeping cash aside in your somewhere, building up enough cash to float the growing expenses. And exactly. Then in that business, is what's limiting growth? It depends. And is it get to a stage where you can't hire anymore because there's not enough cash in the bank? Is that the typical thing? Or is it the other side? People can't find enough placements.
It's always some type of combination. And that's why I look at it as two different pipelines. Hmm. It's rare that you talk to too many staffing owners that say, oh, I've got all the jobs I want and all the applicants I want, and they all match up perfectly. Right. It's typically either I got too many jobs I can't fill, or I don't have enough applicants, or I have too many applicants and I don't have enough jobs to fill. So it's, and then obviously the labor market there is a huge,
hot topic.
There's a huge variable in there as well.
Yeah. Would you own one of these businesses if you could? Are they nice businesses to own?
They can be. Yeah, I think they are nice businesses to own. I'm personally not a sales guy. And you need a lot of time. A lot of these businesses are started by a recruiter that's really excellent at their craft, right? And they decide, I don't want to work for the massive staffing company. I want to go start my own. Yeah. And then they might hire one other recruiter because they're growing, and then maybe a third one. And then they start getting to the point where hopefully they might think about, oh, I might need Scott to help out. But yeah, they can be, but it is. It's a lot of sales. And yeah, my skills are more on the finance side.
Yeah, you and me both. I'm not good looking enough. Every day and again on LinkedIn, I get a connection request from a stunningly good looking person. Yes. And I'm like, okay, what's this about? Oh, hey, what are the chances? They want to play someone with me. So I'm not going to compete with those guys. They're at next level. Okay, cool. So let me get a bit more operational here. I think I mentioned it to you on the phone. The last mastermind we had, we should say we're running monthly masterminds now at the end of the last Wednesday of every month. If you're a fractional CFO, come together, meet other fractional CFOs, swap your challenges or whatever. And one thing came up last month, which was, let's say you're dealing with someone where it's on the one side, you have something like an insurance company and they basically control the market. So you haven't got much flexibility as to what's going to be paid to your staffing rates. Your upside is limited, if you like. And those guys are professional purchasers, right? So they know how to squeeze. So have you come across that where you don't really have flexibility on the upside, but the downside is there because of all the other problems, like people get sick and they need holiday and they need training and they don't turn up, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, that's tough. Going up against the behemoths that are insurance companies is not easy. And unfortunately, I don't think there is a magic wand or a silver bullet with that in that case. However, working across multiple insurance companies, they pay different types of rates. I know that depending on who you are, sometimes you can negotiate those rates as well. So I would say at least try, right? Try to negotiate those rates up. At times, if you have the option of going direct, so you know, you get whoever the end client is to pay directly instead of going through insurance, or you set that up ahead of time, then that's another option that I've seen. And just stress testing, right? Just, okay, if I have X percent of my business going through these insurance companies, and let's say they drop their rates to like 5, 10, 15% or whatever stress testing you want to put on it, what does that do? Where is the point of that I need to walk away?
Okay.
And that to me is the key of, okay, let me know ahead of time so that when insurance company A comes to me and says, I'm dropping my rates by 4% or your rate by 300 bips, you know that if they do that, you have to walk away and be ready to walk away.
Yeah, that reminds me, me and my partner did a procurement training. We got certificates. You're talking to a distinction holder and certificate training, I don't know, years ago. Anyway, it was a long 5 weeks of my life, to be honest. But we all woke up in the middle of the lecture, the guy started talking about Batman. And we're like, hold on, where's Batman coming into this? And he didn't say Batman. He said Batman, best alternative to a negotiated agreement. Mm-hmm. And that's what made the whole course worth it for me. Is never walk into a negotiation without being able to walk away. Know what you're going to do if you just can't go ahead. No, not every deal has to work.
No,
but if you know that, yeah. And then
obviously it's different in the public sector, and there's different forces, market forces that come to play. But if you're a private business, maybe you have some investors, maybe not, but sometimes you're better off letting revenue go out the door. It's hard, but sometimes you're better off that.
Yeah, I've heard that lots. I've heard it like people saying, oh yeah, I fired my worst 10% of my customers and now my business is amazing. But man, it's hard. Like it is when you know what you do to get that customer, right? You crawled over glass in some cases, it feels like, to get them and then to willingly, and then you're trying to get new and then to willingly just put one. You know, it's hard. But then you always have that. You have the 10% of customers who are consuming the 30 or 40% of resources. Mm-hmm. And what do you do? Yeah. Maybe that's a good topic. That's the sort of conversation maybe you do have with your CFO. If you were able to see the wood for the trees, hey, listen, these clients, they seem to be costing this or taking too much time. And you know, the reward isn't there for it at a certain stage, but it's hard to judge without the numbers to back that up.
It really is. And I will tell you, the more companies I get into and look at, and one of the first things I will do, or one of the things I'll do a lot of times is, let's take a look at your client base and or maybe your provider base, meaning if you're a people inside, right? If you have people that have employees that provide services, and the Pareto principle. Oh my gosh, it is amazing how close companies come to that and they have no idea. And I worked with a church and I did not expect this to happen with a church, but I kind of went through, did some analysis and it still fit, right? And I don't work with nonprofits, but it's just a very special case. But yeah, just looking at businesses that, 80% of their revenue comes to 20% of their clients as well. And then you look at the profitability breakdown as well. If you can get to the profitability, that can be a little bit trickier. But yeah, it's uncanny how often that comes to play and people have no idea.
I'm visualizing the pastor standing up in front of the congregation and I said, now, I'd just like to start today by firing Mrs. Wilkinson. She's great, but to be honest, the juice isn't worth the squeeze. I'd like to escort you out.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I'm sorry. You're listening too much. We're going to need you to walk out and get something in here that supports your listening with a little financial as well.
Yeah. Have you considered Judaism? Maybe we can offer you something else from the menu. Okay. All right. Okay. Let's move on before we get in trouble because Okay. So you have four pillars that you use as a framework. We're going to talk about this a little bit. I want to find a bit about how you came to these four pillars when you work with a new client. I guess, what are these pillars? Is this something you explain to a client or how does it help you?
It is. And it definitely took a while for me to. So when I started as a fractional CFO, it was, I'm a fractional CFO. I'll do whatever with anybody and have definitely moved on from that perspective. And it's tricky, right? It's hard because people ask, what's your hourly rate? Or how many hours are you going to work for me? And it doesn't really, I don't like that approach. I don't charge hourly and I'm not going to report how many hours because at the end of the day, if you're not seeing the value, then we need to have a conversation about that. In order to explain it a little bit differently, I've come up with how I work with clients, and it's based on four pillars, like you said, James. So one is operational excellence. And this is specifically in the accounting and finance area. So is your bookkeeping accurate? Is it organized? Is it organized to provide information that's useful? Do you have AP, AR tools, processes in place? Do you have owners? Are you reconciling the bank accounts? Now, I'm not going to do that as a CFO, but I'm going to take a look at that. And I'm going to let you know, as well as, do you have the right butts in the seat, right? Do you have the right people in the right roles in that area? So that's operational excellence. The second is cash optimization. And this is really, do we have the cash levels? What are the cash levels going to be? How do we get more cash? What are our funding sources? Are we looking at 13 weeks and then longer term monthly cash forecasting? So are we getting interest on cash that's sitting around in the company?
All right.
That's optimizing your cash. The third is profitability engineering. And that is, where is the profitability in the business coming from? Going back to that Pareto principle of, do you know who your clients are? Do you know your goods and or services? Do you know how profitable those are? Do you know what your margins are on it? Can we adjust those margins at all? So that's the third one, is profits. And then the fourth one is capital allocation. Mm-hmm. And this is getting into, where and how are we investing in the business? And specifically, where are we going with the business? So this gets a little bit more into the strategic projections, the financial projections. How do we go out for funding? How do we find funding? How do we find investors? And you know, there's definitely some overlap between those four. But to me, it allows me to, okay, this is your finance, right? It's operations, it's cash, it's profits, and then it's capital. And depending on how many of those I'm going to be working on at a time, kind of depends on my engagement. Because you can't work on all four of them and only talking to somebody once a month. It just doesn't work that way.
Okay. All right. So now, the interesting, because I'm talking about thinking about your practice here. So how you bill, it sounds like some people say, hey, is my hourly rate, buy as much as you want. You've gone away from the hourly rate. Mm-hmm. I guess we have this stigma against selling your time. Is that part of it? Do you like this idea of, no, I'm going to try and deliver on value, but then you have to be able to convince people the value is going to be there. I'm used to paying people hourly, and then suddenly it's this ambiguous thing. What's your motivation here? What are you trying to do with your business by charging in this sort of pillar productized? It's almost like a productized approach, right? That's what it sounds like.
A little bit, yeah. So it's part of the other reason that I've gone down this path is, as a fractional CFO, prioritizing and being aligned with the business owner is critical. I cannot do everything at one time. Mm. That's what a full-time CFO can do, right? They can be there every day. They can be touching on all aspects of the business, all financial areas of the business at a time. Whereas I need to know, where am I going to focus? And we need to line up the deliverables and the areas I'm going to be focusing on for the next, let's say, month, 2-3 months loosely. And if I'm going to be working on, what's the cash going to look like over, you know, we have cash concerns. So I need to work on that, as well as what I really need to know my profitability is with these clients, because I know, let's say it's a seasonal renewal business, right? So maybe they have some renewals coming up and they want to know if they need to adjust pricing. Okay, then let's focus on the cash projections as well as the profitability of your business. So then we're going to work on those two areas. And if, again, it goes back to the question of, or the principle of, if they're not seeing the value in what we're working on and the deliverables that we're, and the objectives that we're reaching, then yeah, absolutely. We need to have that conversation. It's rare that I get to that point. It's more of, okay, Scott, what else can we work on now?
So do you say to people, okay, listen, you work with me, these are my pillars, we're going to start working, I'm going to send you an invoice when we've done the first pillar? Or do you... how do they know what they're going to end up spending?
That very, very good question. So I work on a fixed monthly retainer.
Got it.
So they know up front. We're going to say, all right, up front, if I'm working on one, then it's X. If I'm working on two, it's X plus, so on.
Okay, interesting. So this is good. So normally with a fixed retainer, your incentive, it doesn't align the incentives, right? Because you get your fixed retainer, your one-way dealer incentive to get the job done and move on. Whereas you have this sort of half step, which is you can bolt on things. So yeah, now I'm getting extra money for this, so it's okay. But I'm not totally charging per hour, which is limits your upside as well, I guess. You can it puts the focus in the wrong place. Like, focus should be on, hey, we just freed up an extra 100 grand profit for you. What do you want to pay for that?
I just generate because we're looking at cash. We got into a sweep account, so I just paid for myself, right, from the interest on that. Or we just played with your pricing, so now your margins went from 21% to 22%. And you know what? That's going to bring in maybe a couple hundred thousand dollars a year, or depending on what their size is.
Yeah. That's there's Action Coaches, which is a franchise of business coaches. And the first thing they do when they go into business is they pay for their fee. They say, okay, let me sit down, let me figure, try and pay for my own fee here. And sometimes that means they get fired straight away because, like, I'll just fire you and then I'll free up some money. But anyway, so that approach is great. And then a 10x multiplier is perfect, right? So if you can say, listen, I'm only a tenth of whatever, you know, then that's what you want, because you want a happy customer, happy to write the check, you're happy to do the work. That's what you're aiming for. Okay. So maybe we can just move towards the end here and tell us a little bit about who's your ideal customer in terms of size, revenue. We've talked about staffing. You said you work all over the US. Tell us a bit more there about who should reach out to you.
Sure. So right now, my focus, and this is a little bit where I've taken the business as well, is I'm really focusing in the staffing space, and specifically on staffing companies that are in that less than $30 million in revenue. They don't have a CFO. They would like to start financially planning for their business. They would like to understand, have clear financials that they understand, and have the CFO guidance so that they can reach their goals. And so that's where, you know, it might be, it's probably a staffing company that's bigger than just one or two people, right? Maybe they're starting to hire a couple other recruiters. Okay. They get to the point where I can't really handle all this in my head or scribbling down on a piece of paper of where we're going to go with the business. And I really need help to put together the financial plan to the goal, come up with metrics to track the progress, and then have a CFO that is experienced in staffing, talking with them once a month, keeping them diligent, keeping them accountable to what they're doing, and getting them to that next stage of their business.
Okay, I'll just throw in a bonus question here because I should have asked this and I did not, but what are the KPIs you typically use in a staffing business?
So a lot of them, day sale outstanding, so how long is it taking to collect? Margins are incredibly important because the whole business is based on margins. So looking at what those margins are. And then there's some others where, depending on where they hit in staffing, you can definitely look at, you know, what are my operating expenses per provider or per internal employee? So you can keep track of, okay, am I operating expenses getting a little bit too out of hand in relation to how many people I'm placing as well as internal? So those are a couple. And then it's always, I'm sure you talk to a lot of CFOs, it's always looking at that cash, projecting how that cash is going to be, which is kind of a given almost, but just critical.
Yeah. Now, there's a lot of new tooling. I came across a company today, High Radius. They do what they call the order to cash, which is interesting. There's all these little extra, there's AP, there's AR, and then there's order to cash, which is the time it takes when you got the deal into collecting it. And they focus on that, which I thought was
interesting.
Okay, this has been great. So I have a famous question. If you've listened to more than two of these episodes, which I'd say at least I have, then you'll know that the last question is always the same, which is, who's your business hero, Scott?
Sure. And I'll throw two out there. One, Peter Drucker, I think I love a lot of his quotes, a lot of his messaging.
Classic.
I mean, it doesn't get much better than the best way to predict the future is to create it. That just fits what I do to a T.
Yeah.
The other one is a little bit, not necessarily business, but Abraham Lincoln. And I read his book, but The Lincoln on Leadership. It's by Donald Phillips a couple of years ago. And it's just a collection of statements and ideas that Lincoln came up with or had. And just his approach to the war, to politics, slavery at the time, being a father, and just people in general. It really resonated with me. And all, I felt like a lot of that, if not all of that, even though it was a few years ago and in different areas, absolutely applies to business and how you deal with business and just working with people in general.
Okay, I need a LinkedIn on leadership. I've never heard of it, so that's great. It's in my Amazon cart now. Thanks for that, Scott. And thank you for listening. If you got this far, congratulations. Your special reward is to be able to go to procurementexpress.com/CFOmastermind, where you can sign up for that mastermind I mentioned earlier. So come along. We break you into groups with 3 or 4 other fractional CFOs. Bring your business challenges, your practice challenges, get advice from your peers. It's been a big hit. I'm enjoying it. I think everyone else is too. So that's my invite to you. Scott, you've been a star. Thank you very much for coming on the Gross Profit Podcast.
Thank you, James.